it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Pompey Pubcast that combines the beers and the blues.
Barros for Pompey, round Kuchak goes down, penalty to Potts with an old Trafford. Barros tripped by Thomas Kuchak, who sent off Montari do the job. He steps up, left footed, scores for Pompey. They lead at Old Trafford in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup.
Jamal Lowe's onside, the flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Portsmouth Football Club are promoted to League One.
Curtis across the face, a goal. Marquez! He's won it! 96 minutes on the clock! Parker the heading back to Wembley!
This is Three Lads in the Pub.
Three Lads in the Pub on a Monday straight after a goalless draw at Morecambe. This is going to be really fun. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hello.
And also Ryan.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for joining everyone.
The reference of sounding like it was underwater then is because Ryan quite literally is covered in beer. And we've only just started. going well.
Get me to Carlisle.
Yeah. Oh no, don't say that. But we are here. Ryan. We have some new beer glass, some new pint glasses to start off this podcast. Kindly donated to us by the amazing Aaron, who joins us at pretty much every pub every week, which is fantastic. Cheers, Aaron. Thank you very much, mate.
What's going on?
Super fan, Aaron.
Super fan, Aaron, yes. Who needs a sponsor when you've got Aaron? Thank you very much, mate. Really appreciate it. Yes, we are at the Old House at home. I always look over to check I'm at the right pub every time I'm here, because I don't want to say another pub. But we're here. Jeff. What have you gone for?
I'm on a mixed fruit cider with a Jager Bomb Chaser. Because it's been one of those fucking days.
Ryan, you've also doubled up, and you are going for?
I've got a double rum and coke and an IPA.
Okay.
An Atlantic.
Fair enough. I've got a Moretti. There's quite a few drinks on the table. We'll be all day if we went round and did them all, so... But there's plenty of booze going down on a Monday, and I think we all
would like to caveat that Ryan is not drinking the Atlantic as much as he would like to.
I'm wearing half of it.
I'm a transatlantic man. Mr. International, they call me.
Good crowd here as well in the pub, and a great pub. Great to be back here this afternoon. Right, let's get straight into it. Who wants to start? MK. How was it?
Two people screwed us over that day. Joe Morrell screwed us in the first half. John Messino screwed us in the second half. Joe Morrell's screwing us is obvious, and it is a red card. There's no debating it. It is a red card. People on Twitter saying it's justified because he was put into a headlock. You do not get yourself sent off and banned for four games because the opposition player is a dick. Joe Morrell plays international football and he's played championship football. He's played football in multiple different countries. He has met his fair share of dickheads in his time as a football player. Why you fucking chose MK Dons away to act out that dickheadness or retaliate against said dickheadery and get yourself sent off in full view of the linesman and pretty much every Pompey fan in that corner of the ground, which happened to be every Pompey fan because that's where we were. Screw your team by putting them down to 10 men and be unavailable for the next three games. Especially when you've already been sent off for some clumsy bollocks this calendar year at Fleetwood for a ridiculous handball. Now, we all laughed off the handball at Fleetwood. It's like, oh, silly Joe, he'll be out for the Peterborough game. He'll probably regret it and he'll come back better and stronger because he's been a really good player since the World Cup. And he has, but he's fucking cost us there. He's cost his teammates.
It's not only cost us there, he's cost us today.
Yes.
Isn't it a four-game ban as well, by the way?
Was that? Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's a four-game ban.
Four-game.
And we'll get on the reasons why he's cost us today as well, but he has cost us on Friday. You come out of that game, you get a 1-0 win. You go into today's game being 2 points behind your chasing pack. You're still in with a shout. You know, Then you go into today's game with the ascendancy and the impetus. I'm sorry, but like Ryan says, John Massino got it wrong. We sat back. And I can cut him some slack in that sense. I think it's a bit naivety because he is, you know, in his first managerial post. But he sat back. He wanted to attack us. Let's see what you got. I think, you know, try and break us down. Let's be compact. I thought we actually played better when we were on the front foot after they equalised and we went for it. I mean, you know, Piggott nearly scored in the dying minutes. You know, it hits the bar and it goes out. On another day, that hits the bar on the underside of the bar and it goes into the top right corner. Look, it's games are won and lost on fine margins, and there was no excuse for Joe Morrell getting sent off. I was watching it and I follow. Now, initially, I thought it was because he put his head next to the other player's head.
That was what was said on Twitter straight away, wasn't it?
And he's run his head down the side of the MK player's, you know, left cheek. Now, initially, that's what I thought it was. But when I saw the replays, you clearly see the right leg come off the floor, and then knee him into the left hand side of his rib cage. Full view of the linesman. Full view. Now, there's no excusing doing that. Okay, the foul's already been given. You've been wrestled to the floor. The foul's been given. Get up and go away. I'm going to say this now. It was a third eye. This has been building for a number of weeks. Last week, Joe Morrell against Forest Green was kicking. When we had a throw-in down in the corner of the fat and end of the south stand, Joe Morrell was kicking the centre-half's shins. And the centre-half turns around and starts complaining to the referee. Morrell then gives him a bit of shithousery, turns around and says, what's your name? And starts pointing at his number and name. And was physically seen saying to the centre-half, oh, who are you? Like, giving it Billy Big Balls, you know, I've played in the World Cup. He was physically kicking that player in the shins. Now, this, like I said, this has been building for a number of weeks. Danny Cowley referenced him and called Joe Morrell spiky. There's been spiking, there's been a fucking dick.
This gives me Marcus Harness vibes.
Look, we've laughed off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We've laughed off a couple of things, like the handball against Fleetwood, because fortunately it didn't cost us. The off the ball trip on Dan and Lundaloo in the Bolton game, because we were 3-1 up, and it was funny, but don't get caught doing it. But now it is costing us. And now we are 1-0 up, chasing the playoffs, down to 10 men for 60 minutes against an MK Dons side that has been poor overall but is in good form at the minute at their place.
Yeah, and this is where it goes back to your comment about John Massino screwing us over second half. We sat back. You're down to 10 men. You're expending more energy a lot quicker being down to 10 men. So you should have made your, in my opinion, you should make your substitutions round about the 60-minute mark, 55, 60-minute mark, put some fresh legs on, and then you change it again round about the 70, 75th minute, put some more fresh legs on.
Yeah.
We sat back. We sat and we got it wrong. And
I don't, in theory, have a problem with the general concept of sitting back when you're down to 10 men.
No. But you got to put fresh legs on.
We've gone too far with it. Like from the moment the second half started, we've retreated into our box. Yes, you could be conservative. Yes, you could be cautious. Yes, you can sit back like you would sort of typically do when you're down a man and you've still got half a game to go. But you can't defend
two thirds.
You can't defend your own box for 45 straight minutes. Like, that is almost FA Cup third round dog and duck FC versus Arsenal kind of defending. Like, yeah. But that is the kind of defending you can't sustain that for 45 minutes. We started way too deep in our own half. Now, considering we've got 10 men for 60 minutes, we've got another crucial game against the relegation scrapper 3 days later. He's made two subs before the 90th minute. Now, at full time, three separate players collapsed to the deck. Collapsed. I've not seen that since we drew 1-1 away at Sunderland in the 18-19 season. It was the game right towards the end of the season before we went back for the playoffs. I've not seen that level of tiredness from players after a game until Saturday. Mussinho screwed him with a setup for the second half, and then he screwed the players out there by not helping them out. Dell was beat. Bishop was beat. Pack was beat. Ogilvy was beat and injured. He would not take players off. He would not replace players. You've got five subs for a reason. The advent of adding two subs to the traditional three to make it five was a godsend for the exact purpose of rotating fresh players into a game when you needed it. But 10 men for 60 minutes and he's made two fucking subs before injury time. The players were exhausted. Pickett was on the pitch for 2 minutes and still hit the bar. Imagine what he could have done with 15 minutes. Now, this isn't me saying go all out at them. By no means. Yes, be cautious. But if a player is knackered, a player is knackered. You take Dale off, you bring on either Scarlett or Hackett, and you tell them, Scarlett, you're 19 and you're quick. Hackett, you're 25. You're not as quick, but you work that much harder. I'm going to give you 38-year-old Dean Lewington, nearing the end of both season and career, 20 minutes. We're going to pump the ball into the channel. You run at it for 20 minutes. See what happens. We didn't fucking try it. We didn't even have a go. It was cowardly. He let the players down. And it brings it into Monday. Because how many of those players out there, second half, looked like they even had 50% energy left?
All of them.
They looked knackered. And that's a direct knock-on effect because they were hung out to dry by the coach on Friday because he wouldn't replace enough of them. How Hackett never got off the bench on Friday. Scarlett never got off the bench on Friday. Thompson, where MK are controlling the ball in the midfield and Louis Thompson, the turnover specialist, doesn't get a second of the game?
I generally don't think...
It was baffling.
I generally don't think Mussinho rates Thompson. Friday was calling out for Thompson to come on, break up the play, hold the middle of the midfield. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. If it was me and I was coaching 11-a-side football, I would go, right, do you know what? I'm gonna go 3-5-1 because we're down to 10.
Yep.
So my wing backs are gonna drop back to a back five when we haven't got the ball. My midfield four are gonna be compact. I've got the width out wide because when you're down to 10 men, any coaching manual will tell you you've got to make the pitch as big as possible. So I'm gonna play a four across the middle. I'm gonna compact the middle. I've got a left back and a right back out there, and I've got three in the centre of defence. And you leave one up front. You bring Scarlett on for that long ball over the top. We know he's got pace to burn. And you go long.
Yeah. But we didn't do it. Yeah, exactly. We didn't do it. And the other knock-on effect is Ogilvy's absence from today. He sustained an injury in the MK game, but he couldn't come off because we didn't have two defenders on the bench. How on a seven-man bench you don't have two defenders? Because obviously Clark came on at half-time. It was confirmed after the game that Towler was left out for tactical reasons. How do you not have two defenders on a bench in a seven-man bench? Now, if Ogilvy just sustains the knock and gets taken off straight away for Towler, I'm not saying he would have made today, but he wouldn't have aggravated whatever knock it was by having to play on with that injury with a man down against an MK side that's trying to beat you. If Towler comes on at the moment Ogilvy gets whatever knock it is, we may have done there may have been enough to bring Ogilvy back today, or maybe a game earlier than he might currently be now that he's had to play on with that injury. The mistakes he made as a
Denver
coach. Or
even Hume on the bench.
Or even Denver Hume. The mistakes he made were before kickoff, and it went right through the game. Now, this isn't me saying he's a bad head coach overall before everyone starts screaming to the other end of the spectrum saying, oh, you're saying he made a mistake, that means he's a shit coach. No, stop overreacting. But Friday, as I said, Morrell started the chain of events that fucked us, and Messina did more than enough to complete that chain.
I totally agree. You, look, Denver Hume started today, and I thought Denver had a solid game. There were spells that I thought he was bright and industrious, and I thought he was an attacking threat. And you go back to John Messina's comments about he sees Denver possibly playing higher up the field as an attacking winger on the left-hand side of three behind Bishop. So why did you not have him on the bench? Why did you not have that option to go, do you know what? If we've got to go to a back five because we're going to soak up the pressure, I've got Denver Hume, who's more of a natural left wing back than Rico or anyone else. So you have that option there. And again, going back to your point, we've waited now. When I was in the Victory Lounge, I saw Conor Ogilvy walk in at 2:30. I was like, as much as I want Conor to go forward with the ball, defensively, he's great. He's brilliant. It will, you know, defensively solid in that left-back position. Yes, I do have issues about how many times he goes on the overlap, and he's more defensively cautious than Denver. But it just baffles me why you wouldn't have him in that squad on Friday.
Yeah.
And go back to your point. Now, Conor is out, what, this game? Is he going to be back for the weekend?
Well, yeah, because, you know, don't mistake it. I know it feels like a Saturday, folks. It's a Monday. We play in 4 days again.
Yeah.
Is Ogilvy going to be fit and raring? Because Shrewsbury out of it? Well, they probably are now, because we're already 7 points. I don't imagine Shrewsbury were already, what, 2-3 behind us before the start of the day? So it's probably over for them. But I said at the start of the season, outside playoff contenders, and after 40 games, yeah, they got to about
Shrewsbury
that area.
55. Charlton have overtaken them now.
Yeah, so it's over for them, yeah, realistically. But they've had a much better season than they have traditionally. It's not going to be easy. So the Ogilvy, whatever it is, we don't know what it is right now, but it could have been prevented. And it has had a knock-on effect today. Well, I think the positives to it, because it wasn't all shit at MK. the goal. What? Right, if you're not a Pompey fan and you don't know League One football at all, you look at that goal and you think, that's fucking brilliant. The ball from Raggett, the first time Robin Van Persie-esque tucked the foot in with the, like, it's the instep volley, but actually curls the other way. It's proper Van Persie-esque, the way he's planted it. If you don't know League One ball, you think that's like two absurdly good wingers plying their trade. No, that's Sean Nokia Man Raggett, the man who has had a fight with the North Stand and won, the man who's had a fight with the Fratton End and won, the man who has the turning circle of the HMS Queen Elizabeth, and Conor Ogilvy, who... you know, we've not really seen the best version of Ogilvy this season at all.
He started off well, didn't he? Just disappeared.
He did, yeah,
first season,
well, most
awesome
of them did. But that goal between that goal is the centre back and the left back
that's like Brazil in the World Cup. Yeah, it's with the two centre halves are playing the ball off.
We're like watching the blue Brazil. That ball from Raggett is one of the single best crosses of the
season.
Yeah. And that finish from
Ogilvy.
And yet
today we turned into Alan Brazil.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Have you seen someone?
The finish from Ogilvy is so cool.
The current Alan Brazil.
Yes, the current one. Not in his old playing days.
No.
Have you seen someone put like a comparison of the cross from Raggett and David Beckham? It literally is the same.
I don't know where they've got that from.
I don't know.
That was an extraordinary goal from two defenders. And it caused some great scenes in the away end. Early doors at MK, that was
a good
day.
But unfortunately,
you thought from there we can go on and build and get a second or third.
Yeah.
Because, you know, MK, okay, they're solid at home. They always have been. They've stepped away from playing MK Don Ball or whatever we want to call it. They've kind of stepped away from that in the last 5 or 6 games. And they're picking up results. I saw some conspiracy theories. I love football conspiracy theories about the referees are being told to keep Pompey in this league. They don't want Pompey into the playoffs. And I was like, fucking stop talking.
We're not
shit.
Brighton.
Stop talking who, shit.
But Brighton actually have a valid gripe with officiating. I don't think we do. Like,
I saw it on social media.
You know, let's go back to Bristol Rovers,
like,
the offside goal at Bristol Rovers. You know,
look. It's Friday, okay. If you look in the grand scheme of things, Friday was a good result, being down to 10 men for that amount of time. Friday statistically becomes a good result.
Just off the
When you play the percentages of what you're up against, yeah.
Just looking at the game, and you're saying about conspiracies with referees, how did MK not get one player booked?
Do you know what? This is something I wanted to address. We committed 17 fouls in that game. MK committed 11. We were awarded 6 cards overall in the game, 5 yellows and 1 red. MK, as Liam Rantley points out, 0 yellow cards. So we out-fouled MK by a factor of 3-2. But we out-carded MK by a factor of 6-0. Now, the referee, or the officials in general, were right to send Joe Morel off, no question.
However,
the official has not cost Pompey anything in that game. However, his consistency in awarding cards, again, we awarded, we out-fouled MK 3-2, so therefore, if we had 6 yellow cards or 6 cards overall, MK should have at least had in the region of 3-4. To end up on 0, especially when the fouls are of the same nature, you know, hauling players down on counter-attacks, late challenges when there's almost a perpendicular coming together in midfield. The fact they walked away with 0 cards, good point raised by Liam, shocking
consistency. What I'm saying is, not doubting it was a red card, because it was a red card, but you do that wrestling move in a...
Harvey should be off.
And I mean, at least a yellow.
Harvey should be off.
You get a gold medal. You get a gold medal for that in fucking
WrestleMania
in the Olympics.
Was 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Liam.
I'll go back to the three stipulations. Is it reckless?
Oh, here we go.
Is it excessive force?
No.
Is it violent conduct?
Yes.
Two of those three.
Is it?
You can't get someone in a headlock.
You can't headlock someone and spin into the ground.
It's definitely a yellow.
Exactly.
It's definitely.
No, I'm not saying it was a red. It was definitely yellow.
If Doucouré can and. If Doucouré can caress Harry Kane's soft and supple face, because he's probably got sponsorships with some kind of skincare company, and get a straight red for it, why is Dan Harvey in his spandex acting out WrestleMania at Stadium MK a yellow? It's a red. But that doesn't give Morel the right to enact vigilante justice. And everyone on social media defending Morel, saying, well, I would do the same. Drop the fucking big boy faux arrogance. Not every general in every military fights every single battle they can find. You pick your battles. You don't fuck your team over for the next 4 games. Actually, 4.5, including the game he did actually fuck his team over in. Pick your battles. Sometimes you get up, you walk away, and you win the war, not the battle.
You can't even argue it.
It's a military analogy. What am I to argue?
Jeff's like, I've got another Argentina anecdote. By the way, weirdly quiet on that front, so I think you're all right.
I had some comments the fan zone last week from Den and Harry.
We were umming and ahhing, what's it called, that podcast, and we thought it was going to go down like a balloon.
We were literally out the door,
balloon.
And it was like, don't cry for me, Argentina.
Shall we? I'll sod it.
I think to end the MK game on a positive,
we need the end of the season.
Great shift from the players. I'm not gonna slander the players that remained on the pitch for that game. They really did work hard. Yeah, of course there were mistakes, but they were fucking tired because their manager wouldn't replace anyone. I know Dale wasn't at his peak again, but the guy put in a real shift to get back and try and help out. I thought Bishop led the line well enough to try and get to the channels. The players that remained on the pitch at MK put in a proper shift, which is just the most extraordinary contrast to what we've just seen a couple of hours ago at Fratton Park, we'll get onto now
segue.
Because again, it's a direct knock on.
So obviously MK 1-0 draw, if you missed that, Pompey picked up a point on the road. On a cheerier note, Pompey at home to Morecambe, 0-0 draw. Oh dear.
We expended so much energy on Friday.
Yeah,
that good Friday turned into bad Friday.
Our average Friday.
Yeah.
Moody Monday.
That today was...
What a very British holiday that would be. Average Friday.
Everyone's standing in queues for 4 hours and not moaning. That today was just flat. There was no... Walking down here, the Morecambe fans were walking alongside Kamal and I. And we overheard the Morecambe fans saying, Pompey didn't want to score today. They just passed it sideways. You know, the irony of the Morecambe fans shouting attack, attack, attack on around about 83 minutes says it all, because they knew that they were in that game and they could still win that game at 82.
Hey, they're staring down the barrel. They're staring down the barrel. They need
it. And you know, the Morecambe players put a shift in today. There were times in that second half we can count our blessings that they missed.
Oh, they could have won it. That Taylor chance. Yeah. That Taylor chance was gold.
They missed two, maybe three chances. They were in this game and they were up for it. And to hear a Morecambe fan saying, Pompey just want to play it sideways, to me says, just reaffirms everything we've said about MK Dons. That there are times where you keep possession of the football. There are times where you play it back and you play it sideways. But unless your sideways or backwards pass then has a positive impact, you don't fucking play it backwards. You don't play it sideways. You go for the positive pass. I'd rather see a positive crossfield ball out to the wing that doesn't come off, rather than Clark Robertson being chased down by no one. He's 40 yards out, plays it back to Macy. Why? Take a touch, turn round, play a positive pass forwards. Carry the ball another 10 yards up the field. Why don't you do that? Because they're being coached to keep the ball. But you've got to keep the ball in the right manner.
Yeah, you've got to be bold as well. Like, when you're chasing, you don't have the luxury of caution. If you look at the league table now, caution has to be thrown every part into the wind, because we're what? I know we're technically 5 points away, because Bolton has a game in hand.
Yeah.
So we're still technically 5 points away. But if they win that game, I think it might be Accrington, the game in hand, which odds-wise is a banker for them. We are realistically on pay. Well, we are 5 points away.
Well, 5 points behind. Goal difference is seven.
Yeah.
With our negative goal difference.
Yeah, but the other teams are now 7 points ahead, because Peterborough won today, as did Derby. Yeah. No, Derby drew with MK Dons, but certainly Peterborough 7 points ahead. Which, if you draw Friday in the sense that we did, you get out of it thinking, okay, as long as we win today. Because you can get over the adversity of Friday by at least maintaining the gap as it was at the start of the day. So yeah, we're 5 points behind Bolton, but they've got a game in hand. We're seven behind Peterborough, same amount of games played. So I think the realistic way to look at it is seven, and that's huge now. That's where you can't be cautious. That's where you've got to throw players forward in the sense of sensibility, because I don't like the way we do it in desperation. The positive from the first half is, let's be honest, I know there was weirdly the odd boo. I actually thought we'd create enough chances to go multiple goals ahead at half time.
Oh, Tom Lowry, first half.
Tom Lowry, two huge chances, both wide. That beautiful outswinging ball from Dale to the back post that Bishop just can't get to. Another big chance. There's the Scarlet chance where he goes around the goalkeeper. Maybe shoot first time, or if you do cut it back, don't cut it back to Bishop, who's got two men on him. You'd rather go to Dell, who's actually free, or if you get the cut touch, go down. So we've actually got four or five huge chances in the first half to take the lead. I actually went in at half-time feeling, yeah, it's 0-0 against Morecambe, but we've definitely created the chances. We've definitely carved Morecambe apart to take the lead. So I wasn't necessarily down at half-time. I thought we'd done enough to be in the good opportunities, be in the areas we need to be. But second half is where it becomes a knock-on from Friday. The players look exhausted. In our desperation to find the goal we should have bagged half an hour previously, we send everyone up front. Now, if you're a listener from the 1950s, turn your volume up, because you're about to love this part. In the 50s, 2-3-5 was the formation. You had, I can't remember, was it wing halves, inside forwards, and
inside
a centre
left,
forward?
Inside right.
That's right.
Outside left, outside right.
You play 2-3-5. That's what we did second half. We just chucked everyone forward. I apologise. Now, I've my own personal connection to the to a five. Hibernian have a famous five from the 50s that each of them were fucking brilliant. Smith, Riley, Johnston, Turnbull, Ormond, they won the fucking lot apart from the Scottish Cup. It took us fucking ages to do that, but we did it anyway in 2016. Ha ha, Rangers. The famous five were brilliant for Hibs in the 50s, but I have bad news for you all. It's not the 1950s. Chucking everyone up front doesn't work anymore because they stopped it 70 years ago with the advent of 4-4-2 because defences became more of a thing. So if you are looking for a goal, maybe chuck everyone up with 10 minutes to go. But for the entire second half, you've got both midfielders plugging the gaps between the wingers and the forwards, creating a flat five. You've got no one laying off the back line to receive the ball, turn and go with it. So you've got your two centre-backs, you've got your full-backs have pushed on into centre midfield alongside Pack to make you three, and you've got the five standing there waiting for the ball. We created nothing in the second half as a result because we didn't move with the football. We didn't try and play dynamically. Morecambe knew that they had we had a five straight on the back line. We weren't moving, so they didn't have to move. It made them very easy for them to defend and break on the counter because we only had two centre-backs there. We played in the first half, we played enough football to go up 2-3-0 ahead. In the second half, we decided, let's play football from 1950 fucking two and see if that works. Shock, it didn't. Now, is there a clause in Dane Scarlett's contract that says he has to start a certain number of Pompey games? If not, why the fuck was Rico Hackett not starting?
Because I never want to see Dane Scarlett on the wing again.
Because not to single Scarlett out, because by the way, Lowry, awful today. Those two missed chances, turned the ball over way too many times. Dale actually had one of his better games in the first half before it became Owen Dale in the second half that we all know and love.
But Dane Scarlett is not a winger.
No. Well, apparently our plan with Pompey players is to turn everyone into a left winger. Denver Hume, I reckon he'd be a left winger. And then Dane Scarlett, I reckon he'd become a left winger. Can he?
No. It's the short answer in that. No, he can't. I've seen enough of Dane Scarlett on the left wing over the games he's played there to know he is not a left winger. He's not a left winger.
And when he got pulled for Hackett not exactly more effective, but certainly willing to be more bold, trying more adventurous things, shooting from further out, actually trying to test Ripley rather than whatever it was. And the save that Ripley pulls off in stoppage time to stop Hackett from winning it.
Top save.
What a save. And probably just, I know he took it all well and jest, but everyone calling him you fat bastard. I was like, yeah, that's going to come back to bite us. Of course, he makes a worldie save. Now, would anyone like some fun statistics?
He's actually getting his phone out for this one. It's not in his head.
I've noted it down.
Yeah, makes a change.
In the last two games at Fratton Park, we've played 23rd and 24th in the league. We have scored one goal. There are only three teams in League One, famous for being England's third tier of football, who have conceded over 70 goals this season. We've just played two of them in the past week at Fratton Park. We have scored one. They have conceded, Forest Green and Morecambe, a combined 147 goals this season. We scored one. Morecambe are that bad, they've lost five of their past six games. The only point coming against Oxford, who are famous for currently not being a playoff contender. They are 2 points above the drop. We scored one. And it wasn't against Morecambe. That's how pathetic it was today. Can I blame the players? Yes. Do I blame them entirely? No, because they looked fucking knackered in the second half, and it runs back to Friday. You've got five subs. How many did you use? Not all of them. How many of your five subs did you use today? Also, not all of them. Perhaps we should change the EFL ruling to say every club in the EFL can use five subs apart from Portsmouth, because why the fuck?
But you look at that bench today, it's more of a defensive bench than an attacking bench.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the options.
Yeah, but even then, like if you do look at the bench from today, you've got Deshaun Bernard, Hackett, Stuart White, Piggott, Thompson, Towler. That's the bench I would have taken to MK.
Thompson should have started today.
He should, or at least come on against MK. How Thompson hasn't played a single minute of Easter weekend in crucial games against a team that...
I don't think Moutinho rates him.
He probably doesn't. But you also, at some point, have to be pragmatic and go, okay, some of the qualities you do have might have been useful. But instead, we revert to 1950s football and inshallah. Like, we could not get out of our own way, which is appropriate because one of Morecambe's shot in the 80th minute was definitely going in the top corner until it hit one of Morecambe's players and went out for a throw-in. So they literally couldn't get out of their own way. As a result, we're 7 points off the playoffs after what goes down as one of our most gut-wrenching Easter weekends, where we traditionally do well for quite a while. Today was shit. We had a Morecambe team broken, and we nearly gave them victory. I remember the year we lost to, when Blackpool got promoted after they went on that surging run. They came here, they beat us 1-0 with their one shot on target, and my words on Express were, we lost to a team that was trying to draw.
I remember that.
Yo, we nearly did that today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, bloody hell.
Good day then, Ryan.
I'll still go to every game we got left and every game that's been before, and I'll still complete the season, as it were, but I'm not doing so with the same hope and optimism I had when we were 3 points away. Like, if we make it, brilliant, but we have got it all to do now.
Can I say on behalf of everyone at Portsmouth Football Club, Jeff, please stop predicting the scores and the results, because how many is that now?
I've got one wrong. Two wrong, I think.
And that was actually a win when you said it'd be a loss.
I said
Bolton.
Lincoln
you
would
said
be
lose to Bolton.
A win and a loss to Bolton.
Which we won.
But and the Lincoln one nearly came off if Bishop had tucked that away in the last minute. So that takes it away from a win to a draw. Hey,
doesn't at least we got the Tunnicliffe side tackle from
my
that
point
game.
Is, though, doesn't that show what we are as a team?
But more shockingly, I made these predictions back in February. I made these predictions actually at 6 minutes to 10 on February the 13th.
It's like I just said, it just shows what we are. Yeah.
And I've got two wrong. How can I, in my basic football analytic like knowledge.
You've got a coach inside of it, a refereeing badge. Come on, Jeff. Don't put yourself down, mate.
I shouldn't only be two games out of this running. People said I was mad that we when I predicted we would draw against MK and Morecambe. Yet back in February, I'd seen enough in the first half of the season to suggest that these were going to be the runs of results.
Ryan's face is such a picture. Just
nine minutes into the MK game.
Barman, get me another double.
It was 9 minutes into the MK game. I was falling over chairs. I want to go back to Ryan approximately 3:10 on Good Friday. That Ryan was in a good place. that was a happy Ryan. And then we get the all right result against MK on condition that you beat Morecambe. But again, We face a Morecambe side that concedes every 4 minutes. We do nothing about it.
So my next game is a loss against Shrewsbury.
Oh.
Before we come on to the next game, I'll bring the tempo up or the vibe up a little bit and ask you this question. Is it over? Sorry, I'm joking. It's not brilliant.
No. I don't want it to be over because I want to believe in these players because I'm a fucking fan who goes. That's my job.
I just
job.
Had a flashback of our first ever podcast.
I want
title.
To believe.
It's not over yet.
No, I'm the one who's normally saying there's still hope and everything else. It's fucking over.
Podcast day.
I want to believe it's still on.
Look, the season wasn't over with Joe Morel getting sent off last Friday.
No.
The season was over in that one win in 15 in October, November, December.
Yes, because of the uphill climb you have to make as a consequence.
That's when we lost making the playoffs.
What's frustrating is, I mean, it still could technically happen, but there was a glimmer of hope when we just haven't taken the chance, have we?
Well, there
I know it's not over yet, technically.
Because there were little moments that changed together to bring that alive. It was
exactly.
The 93rd minute winner against Burton on Valentine's Day. Yes, the 12 remaining fans there sort of mildly cheered at it because either no one was there. It was a really weirdly quiet, muted celebration for a stoppage time winner. Me personally, I'll always fucking go mental for a stoppage time winner at Fratton Park. That's what I'm dying in the blood for. And then there was the late turnaround win against Bolton. Now that was a cracking night at Fratton. And those wins were what, a week or two apart?
Is that the one I missed both goals on?
Yes. Yeah, you left when it was 1-1. Those sorts of things, I was like, oh, okay, maybe the story isn't over yet. I just don't want to think it's over. Maybe it will be by Saturday on Shrewsbury, but I'll still be there at 2:59 in the stand at Shrewsbury going, win this, you can go back to within 4 points of Derby. You beat Derby at Pride Park, you're back to 1 point. That's what I'm operating on right now.
Shall we quickly just look at Shrewsbury? But we haven't put that on our agenda, but we'll do it anyway. Shrewsbury, the next game. What are we saying, Jeff?
2-0 loss.
So what's your prediction beforehand?
Like that we'd lose.
Oh, you put it as a... Obviously, because Ryan...
So back in February, I said we would lose to Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Shrewsbury on Saturday, you have to go for it. We cannot...
You go.
We cannot be cautious. We cannot be temperate with our use of the ball. We are, realistically, I know the table says five, but realistically, you are expecting Derby to be... Bolton to be Accrington, therefore realistically we are to be 7 points off the playoffs. We have lost the luxury of caution. You now have to go blood and thunder with every single part of the metal and matter that you can muster to hunt it down.
Can I get a little bit more excited for the game? It's a good time to play Shrewsbury. They've just lost four on the bounce.
Yeah, Shrewsbury were at one point.
So it means they're going to win.
Yeah, exactly.
Shrewsbury were at one point bona fide playoff contenders.
Well, they just lost to Ipswich, Charlton, Peterborough and Barnsley in a row.
Yes, so, I mean, and the Charlton one
6-0.
Was 6-0. Yeah. I think Peterborough was, what, 2-3-0?
3-0. They lost 2-1 to Barnsley today.
And I had Shrewsbury to be outside playoff contenders. And they basically were up until middle of March. And then it fell down in a bad way for them. But they still recruited well this season. They're still a well put together team. Considering they're normally the side that finishes 16th, 17th in League One, and over 46 games they'll score 46, concede 46. Basically every game's like 1-1. I think they've basically jumped almost a quarter of the table in one season, which is actually good going when you consider what Shrewsbury have at their disposal. So I think they can still pat themselves on the back and say, well, it's progress compared to what they've been for the last few seasons. And the Meadow's never an easy place to go. Well, we certainly never find it easy to go there.
What are you going for prediction-wise?
Draw.
Jeff, you're going 2-0 loss. You're going for draw. All right, I'll go for a 1-0 win.
I love you to be right.
I don't think we are. I want to win.
Again,
I just think we're going to lose.
I know I do a podcast and I know we have some fairly good listenership. Do you have any idea how wrong I want to be? I want the players to approach me in the street and say, you fat cunt, you were wrong. I would love it for the players to prove me wrong. So when I say draw, I want the players to have a Viking-shaped dartboard on the wall.
You know,
bit like Rocky IV against Ivan Drago, where he screws up. The picture is like,
I want that. Prove me wrong. Use me as motivation.
Do you remember? This gives me Jake
Smith
vibes.
I'll be in the goddamn stand. You can come up at 10 to 5 on Saturday and go, hey, wanker.
Do you remember Jake said on the radio that he wanted us to lose?
Yeah.
Yeah, he never wanted us to win again.
Yeah, he wanted us to lose to Cardiff.
That was it.
Or whatever it was in the League Cup at the start of the season. So, yeah, I say draw Saturday. In my heart, I say win. And I want the players to prove Jeff and I wrong that we do win.
I met his baby the other day, by the way.
What's that?
I met Jake's baby for the first time.
Gracie is a cute human being.
It's crazy, isn't it? Jake Smith's a dad. Crazy. Sorry, just a bit off topic there. But, yeah, good stuff, Jake. Well done. I took her to the Porchester game the other day as well. Oh, she's going to go every away game next season, that girl.
I take no pleasure. Yeah. I take no pleasure in those predictions I made in February, but I've only got two wrong.
If there is one downside to this podcast, well, actually, it's about 412. But if there is an extra, if there's a 413th downside to this podcast, is that we don't do it at 2:59 on Saturday, because at that point I say, yeah, of course we're beating Shrewsbury, but I've just left Fratton Park after a 0-0 with Morecambe. You want me to say we're beating Shrewsbury?
Crazy.
It's what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's Shrewsbury. That was quick. Should we do our features? We're about 45 minutes in. Going to be a short one tonight. But let's start off as we do every
week. Bring up the third eyes.
With Jeff's third eye. I'm talking, delaying it so he can
now
get
we
his
never
notes
covered
up.
The four screen game because we had a brief hiatus due to Liam's badmin.
I'll piss off.
So these are the third eyes from from the Forest Green game. Herman Ryderson.
Oh, God.
Jeff. Hold on, Jeff.
Kamal's just come in with an extra on, round of Jaeger bombs. On, not Jeff. For me, by the way. I'm driving. Good evening,
on.
Officer.
Chin, chin. Go on, Jeff. Oh, he's done that before.
Can
go
someone
on,
take
Jeff.
A photo that I'm staying well clear of the
Herman
Jaegers.
Ryderson. I actually thought we were making Anchorman 4 when Herman was at Fratton Park against Forest Green for the 125 celebrations. He looked very much like Ron Burgundy.
The moustache that Herman was sporting. Yeah.
Very Anchorman-ish.
I have been a heterosexual for all of my life, but yo. yo.
So Joe Morrell's upped his game from the pre-match jig that he does to Mike Oldfield. He's now started clapping along to Mike Oldfield.
He wasn't today.
And kneeing players in the ribs.
Duncan Ferguson.
Oh, big dunk. Duncan Disorderly.
His close game statement was, if one team were going to equalise, it was going to be us. Yes, Duncan, you were 1-0 down. I don't want to explain the rules of football to you, but if you're losing 1-0 and you score, that means you've equalised.
Always baffled me how he took that job. It was never going to work.
I found it interesting that it was basically like a PR stunt that he got hired. Because like the first thing he did as Forest Green manager wasn't talk about like Forest Green's chances of survival in League One.
Or something like
it was
that,
like it? Vegan burgers, and he went into a proper long monologue about
the effect.
Did
they make him try one?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, it's nice.
He was there with Delvins trying a vegan burger, and he was going into a proper long monologue about the state of the planet right now. I was like, well, yes, Duncan, none of what you're saying is actually false. But I'm here to ask you about what it's like to be Forest Green Rovers manager who are trying to
not
avoid relegation in League One. It's like,
no,
but if you trade this bug on, it's fucking baddie.
And a shout out. So I was just...
I'm half Scottish before anyone fucking starts crying.
I was.
My mum was an extra in train spot, so fuck off.
Was she Begbie?
Honestly, my mum comes from the shit parts of Edinburgh, so you know. Then she moved to Portsmouth. So
during halftime against Forest Green, obviously the songs come on, and Blur came on, and it was like whoever the guy is in the Fratton End just turned around, and it's the section as you're looking out from the Fratton End, it's the section to the right of the goal as you're looking out. He was having a right old fucking Britpop moment, singing along to Blur. He was absolutely loving it. He was singing at the top of his voice. He was pogoing. He was like, he was in the moment. And, you know, he was...
Oh, to be in 2000
He was singing
again.
Along to Charmless Man, and he was absolutely loving the moment. So you know, top credit to you for singing along.
Yeah.
Dancing like no one was looking and singing along. And then... Today, I didn't have any from MK, but from today, Pack was having a go at one of the ball boys in the second half. But
I saw that.
Not having a towel. But what had happened in during the first half, because they changed us around, the ball boy who was nearest the Fratton End had gone down to the other end because he thought Pompey were attacking that end first, and the towel... There wasn't two towels on the south hand side. There's only one towel. So the towel was down the opposite end. But at half time, the ball boys forgot to swap the towels out, put the towel down towards the Milton end.
Indeed.
So Marlon Pack's gone running over, screaming for the towel, and the ball was like, oh, have we got one?
Well, good news for any hotel cleaners that happen to listen to the podcast. We're in your niche corner now because I have more towel content for you because we didn't do the podcast after the Sheffield Wednesday game. You know the towels we nicked off Sheffield Wednesday?
They were Sheffield Wednesdays.
They weren't Sheffield Wednesdays. They nicked them from the hotel they stayed in. So they weren't Sheffield Wednesday towels they brought down from Sheffield. They nicked them from the fucking Marriott. So when they moaned you've nicked our towels, what they actually meant is you've enacted vigilante justice and you've nicked the hotel's towels that we nicked. Only that's towel content over, and there'll be no more towel content because apparently Towler didn't feature at all this weekend.
Reminded me of the towel campaign that Bradley Saunders had out for the beach towels. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was great. It worked. He got the beach towels.
It was a movement. We got beach towels. We don't have them anymore, I don't think, but we got beach towels for some time.
And that's it for the third eyes because... After that, I just fucking gave up.
Aaron sent us one in, and it's quite tongue-in-cheek. It's quite funny. Did anybody see the Easter Bunny outside the Fratton before the game? Was that Westwood trying to get in the game?
I
Oh no, Jeff's there.
No.
That's about to happen.
It was Jeff.
I'll cover it in any other business, but. Yeah, I'll cover it in any other business.
Okay.
I did not see these.
That was just like someone saying,
today.
The news is, that there is no news.
Oh, no, I don't want to cut away to a different segue when, you know.
No, I'm joking. Did you get any other third eyes?
Third eyes from MK.
Oh, there is one for MK. One more. Why, when Pompey fans were behind the goal, were the majority of the Pompey fans in the corner? Was it because it was sunny?
Because MK like to do this.
They like to put fans there.
They like to split the away fans out. So when we went there last season and lost 3-1, you had Pompey fans in each corner and the entire of the upper tier, but none behind the goal. I believe this is an MK tactic to try and break up the atmosphere that the 14,000 away fans will inherently produce, because MK have 4 fans.
I thought it was quite funny that
they put you in the corner. They lock off behind the goal and they put the rest of you in the upper tier, so the atmosphere does just not have a central location. It's actually quite good from MK.
I thought it was quite funny they had them flame machines on the side.
Yes.
And I'm telling you now, as someone that runs events, they ain't cheap.
Oh, they're
what
not
are
cheap.
They? What are they? Now, it's League One.
For a club that has previously admitted it's hemorrhaging money, as Pete Winkleman did in 2019, for a club that had to put every last pound of its Scott Twine £4.5 million sale back into the club to prop up its hemorrhaging
really
finances.
Really weird, that, mate. Really weird.
To put flame machines on
that ain't cheap
against Portsmouth.
And it worked. The atmosphere was flat as ever.
The atmosphere. The crowd go mild.
Yeah. I've got. Not really, don't know if it's a third eye or not. A few people I've seen say this. How did Marlon Pack get man of the match today? That awkward silence says everything.
I mean, it would have been tough to pick out a man of the match, because while Dale and Lowry started the game well, Lowry proceeded to pass up huge opportunities and Dale proceeded to revert to type in the second half. It was genuinely tough to pick out a man of the match today. I would have actually gone for Taylor, the Morecambe number 7, whose miss right at the death kept a clean sheet for us.
Yeah, David, my little brother's just whispered in my ear, Jed Wallace. Might as well have gone for
Yeah, why not? Fair enough.
Oh, that I remember that. Even he was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why have you given me man of the match?
Yeah, on field as well.
It was up there with that. It really was up there. It was like, I think in the Pompey News, he scored a 5. Look, Marlon Pack's just come back from injury. And he's played 2 games back to back. And like you said earlier, the team was shattered.
Should we move on then?
I think most of the time it comes down to who the sponsors of Man of the Match, i.e. voters, want to meet. In that case, fair enough, you want to meet the Pompey lad who's made a career of it.
Dub and Din,
we'll start off with...
Don't nominate me as Din, just because I've got the times
Badman.
Wrong.
Badman.
No, Din of the Week. Honourable mentions to John Messino. I think he's just had a bit of a shocker of a weekend. That doesn't mean he's a bad head coach, or I think he's a bad head coach, but if you have a shit weekend, I'm going to say it. Honourable mentions to officials up and down the land this weekend. It has been awful. Brighton away at Spurs Saturday. Possibly the worst display of officiating in all divisions this season. Brighton were absolutely robbed of 2 goals and 2 penalties. The penalty that Oxford got away at Sheffield Wednesday was absolutely not a penalty. The penalty Oxford didn't get away at Sheffield Wednesday was absolutely a penalty. The handball on the line of the Burton Barnsley game, which apparently played with his chest. I didn't know we started growing fingers out of our fucking chest cavity, but here we are, John. There was the Dan Harvey red card, which wasn't given. What else am I missing? There's been more than that. The Liverpool penalty yesterday in the Arsenal game, which wasn't given. It's just been a horrendous weekend for officiating. The one I'm missing is probably the biggest one. The Rochdale goal, which was famous for not crossing the line. and of course the stacked Liverpool linesman who elbowed Andy Robertson. Yes, the entire country enjoyed it, but what the fuck are you doing? Horrendous weekend for officials. The game's on its ass. The winner of Dinner of the Week, however, goes to Joe Morrell.
Yeah.
I like him since the World Cup, and I like his honesty before the Morecambe game, which was his last before he went to the World Cup, saying, yeah, I probably haven't been as good because my focus has, funnily enough, been playing on in Wales' first cup since 1958. I'm not even going to argue. I rate the honesty of that. And he has been better since he's come back from the World Cup. But you've been sent off at Fleetwood for silly bollocks. You've now been sent off at MK Dons for silly bollocks. You now screw your team for four games, including the half game you actually got sent off in, so four and a half games, in a playoff chase. Silly bollocks. Din of the week. Yep. I like him. And no, I know he's got family who listen to this podcast. I can't really apologise, though, because he let his team down.
Yeah, no one's arguing that. Jeff?
Yeah, I've got nothing further to add.
Well done, Joe.
If anyway, he scores the winner upon his return at Pride Park, all forgiven.
I have, actually. And I was going to cover this in any other business. I want a notable mention to the people who bring the drums to Fratton Park. I get your solidarity to your mate John Westwood and John Westwood not being at Fratton Park. But
you're right there, Liam.
But if, to your detriment, if you don't want to bring the drums and bang the drums and not create an atmosphere at Fratton Park and the team play poorly, then that is on you. Okay, the fans are rallying around and there was a, it was lulled to, I don't know what happened at 55 minutes, but all of a sudden we started singing.
I'll cover that in a moment, actually.
But look, if you're doing it to prove a point and it comes down to the fans aren't doing their bit to help this team out, well, that's on you. So that's my notable mention for dinner of the week.
Yep.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. There's obviously two sides of that coin. People will be showing solidarity with Westwood, but at the same time, the actual 11 players on the pitch didn't get them banned. And surely you want to do your all to help them go forward. So I get both sides of the coin, and yeah, it's
been a tough old season for John, hasn't it?
It's been a debate that's raged on all season, and I don't think we're at the end of this debate, because obviously it will rage on until we return.
I have no dog in this fight, and I've met John numerous times, and you know he does a lot of good, but equally he's done a lot of dickish things, and if you are a dick, expect the outcome. That's in any walk of life. If you act a dick, you get treated like a dick. You act in the proper way, you get treated in the proper way.
People are going to say he's being picked out, but if you're kind of in the frame, you know, the limelight like you are, as a super fan, you're leaving yourself wide open. But look, let's move
Does
on
John
from that.
Westwood have a place at Portsmouth Football Club?
Absolutely. Yes.
Has he got to adjust his attitude? And,
absolutely.
And yes.
Even he knows that.
There you go.
But there
I
you
think,
go.
I think my own personal perspective on this is kind of outside whatever he has and hasn't done. It's more of a, taking aside whatever he's done, John has put too much into the football club in terms of his support, in terms Definitely. Of the image Definitely. Over the years. I don't want this to be the way his story ends.
No.
I don't want John's storied life of following Pompey and being the guy that's always there and always noticeable and always back in the team. I don't want this to be the way his story ends, regardless of what he has done or hasn't done or his intentions. I just don't want this to be the way that it ends for John.
No.
That would be tragic. No. I want to end. No. I want John's story to end Sunlit Uplands. I don't know what Sunlit Uplands are in the football world as a fan. It's not like, you know, you pass away at the age of 90 peacefully the night you win the Champions League. So I don't know how Sunlit Uplands reflects as a fan. But I don't want John to, I don't want this to be the end, because he's followed Pompey for too long and been a fan for too long for this to be the end of it. Yes, he has responsibility and accountability, but I hope it change. I hope whatever needs to change Look, does change the extent
if
that,
if that was any of us three, walked into the ladies' toilets and done that, it wouldn't have made the impact on social media that John did. Would we have been escorted out of the ground?
Yeah.
Yes. Would we have received a ban? Yes. Would it have got the traction that John has got? Probably not. But from John's notoriety of who he is and that's why, and it's not the first time this season. That's why. It's a culmination of things. And don't get me wrong, I get why they're showing solidarity, but don't do it to the detriment of the team and the team's performance and the atmosphere. There comes a line where, you know, you've proved your point now. So, would John want this team to fail at the last hurdle? No, he wouldn't. He'd want this team to cross the line. He'd want this team to get in the playoffs. He'd want this team to get promoted. So go out there and create an atmosphere for this team. That's all I'm saying.
Look, I think we can all collectively say we hope he cuts out the silly things and just carry on.
I just don't want the story to end this way. There's got to be a better ending to John's 40, 50 years of following Pompey.
I think the people around, I'm not telling you how to, you know, be a friend, but, you know, just help him.
Look,
you know,
whenever John passes in 30 years' time, there will be a picture of his coffin behind the fatten end when whoever's banging the goal in, you know, to score the winner for the Premier League title or whatever. You know, this guy bleeds blue and white. And look, just cut out the shit antics.
Well, fingers crossed, eh? Look, I'd love to see him back, but he's just got to cut the silly shit out. But look, let's not get into that too much. We said what we said. Where were we on?
We did dinner of the week, which was morale.
Yeah. Unlucky joke.
Dub.
It's a good thing we did this on Monday rather than yesterday, otherwise this wouldn't have got an honourable mention. When the atmosphere was dead in the start of the second half, that massive surge in activity in atmosphere actually came from one guy in the lower tier of the North Stand. On his feet.
Gina, was it Brendan?
No, it looked like a gentleman, maybe 40s, 50s, middle of the lower section of the North Stand.
That's my dad.
On his feet, G'ing everyone up. And it was the North Stand that started the first chant, which is a rarity in itself. And then it carried around the stadium and everyone got going for a good 5-6 minutes. So to that one guy in the North Stand for getting everyone going when everyone just felt, well, as I've said before, League One fatigue is set in. I don't know about you, like I still go to every game, but I'm fucking tired of it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm tired of League One. I'll still go, but League One fatigue is setting, and you could feel it at Fratton today. Everyone's just tired of the perception that we're here for another year. But that one guy in the North Stand, don't know what possessed him to stand up and just instigate the whole of Fratton Park to give it, you know, give it noise for 5-6 minutes.
Good idea.
But he did a really good job of it, and he'll get an honourable mention.
I think David sits in the North Stand. He thinks he knows who you're talking about because it's every game he's trying to do this. So.
Well, apparently it worked for him today. So fair play, it got everyone going.
If you see a middle-aged
and the culmination of that raucous roar in atmosphere, the backing of this dogged working class island. Extricated from the rest of the United Kingdom, this impenetrable fortress of noise and spirit culminated with Joe Rafferty giving Morecambe a throw-in in his own half under no pressure. Up the Blues!
My missus just shit herself. You made
so,
jump.
Yeah, to that one guy in the North Stand, I'm sorry the players let you down, and I'm sorry, Sophie.
And if you see a middle-aged bloke calling the referee a wanker, that's my dad in the North Stand.
The actual dub of the week would have gone to that guy if it didn't go to Aaron for the pint glasses.
Absolutely.
Aaron!
Yes, Aaron, you got dub of the week. Thank you
very much. Come on, Aaron. Yeah. What a boy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a great touch.
That's a fantastic gesture.
Are they on Twitter? Have you put them on Twitter?
Yeah.
If you did it.
I have an honourable mention as well.
Honourable mention, by all means, I welcome.
Paul Riddle, he's a member of the Armed Forces branch, stopped off at Sutton Scotney Services on the way to MK on Friday.
On the O34 for your service station connoisseurs.
Bumped into two Pompey lads who had broken down, their van had broken down, and he was just chatting away, noticed they were Pompey fans, chatting away. So, what are you going to do? He said, got to wait for one of our missus to come and pick us up and take us back to Pompey. He went, fuck that, jump in the car, mate. Didn't have a clue who these lads were. Picked them up from the service station, drove them to MK, dropped them back to Sutton Scotney at 7 o'clock.
Oh, Paul.
Sutton Scotney at 7 o'clock Friday night. Went, what are you going to do now? He went, don't give a shit, we saw the game.
Oh, well done, Paul.
Well done, Paul, for picking these two lads up. Never met them before. And took him up to MK.
Fair Paul's play. Driving antics has actually reminded me of an honourable mention for dinner of the week. which goes to Blake O'Neill, who is one of the Pompey vloggers, who is also a rat. On the way to Barnsley away, his car engine management light came on. That's fine. By the way, he's like only just started driving. He's only just passed his test.
He's got a
beat down car. He really shouldn't be doing this. So on the way to Barnsley away, engine management light, it'll be fine. On the way to Accrington, engine management light, it'll be fine. Actually stopped five times. Got in from Accrington at 8 a.m. Do you live in Warsaw? Anyway, engine management light stays on. He goes to Bristol Rovers, drops his girlfriend off in Bolton. That's apparently on the way. Engine management light still on. Guess what happens the day before MK?
It breaks down.
The car breaks down. If your car's telling you, I fucking need help, listen to it. I have driven 100,000 miles in my six-year-old car. Yes, it costs money to service it, but I've never been that guy you've seen passed on the M6, and trust me, you'd notice me.
I saw someone else on Twitter the other
day. Keep your car in health.
I saw someone else, I can't remember who it is, and I apologise for forgetting who posted this. Said about how many miles they've travelled in their car in their first season of having a car, and it was like 1,340 something. I was like, fuck me, I do that in 3 weeks.
1,340 is what I did the week we played Bolton.
Yeah.
Like the in the 4 day period we played Bolton, that is 500 miles alone, let alone driving to work or getting my daughter to childminder. So I probably did that in 4 days.
I was hoping it was a typo and it was like 13,000.
Lads.
Oh my God, I drove from Ferrum to Waterlooville.
Cautious of time, because you both got plans this evening. Jeff, you're in big trouble if you don't make dinner. And Ryan, you've got dinner plans.
I have other commitments, yes.
I also have to pick my child up. Any other business?
Well, I think you covered your any other business.
I've covered my
in the end
other
anyway.
Business.
Yeah. Any other business? This is probably our largest crowd of the evening. Yeah, so thank you everyone for coming down. I'm sorry that we couldn't have a nice Easter Monday victory over Morecambe and be in the playoffs right now, but it is what it is.
We go again.
Thank you very much, all of you, for popping down.
Quickly. It wasn't me, Amanda, that bought the Jaeger bombs and started all this. So don't implement me in this.
Accusations.
Can you cut that out?
No.
She doesn't listen anyway.
You're right there, Jeff. Number six. But thank you very much, Ryan, Jeff. Pleasure as always, lads. I believe we're in the end of the season already.
Thank God.
Yeah. And we've still not been taken off by the powers of who could take us off. So we're doing all right, aren't we?
Take us off.
No one, we're fucking invincible.
Spotify still thinks we're an American football podcast. Up next, the Detroit Lions.
I have been contacted by a listener in New Zealand, Janine, who listens to the podcast and is an avid Pompey fan, who wants to come over to the UK with her son, watch a Pompey game, come on to the podcast and ask me, do you record all year round, and why does football stop in May? Why is it not like rugby in New Zealand where they only have 3 weeks off at Christmas?
Oh, been that. Could you imagine 49 weeks of Pompey in a year?
Nope.
I do you know what? I love June at times.
I've got a really good idea, lads. When the season ends, let's talk about American football for that. Right, well,
there's
cheers.
There's no American football in May, June either. Like, the season didn't start till September. So we'd just be talking about the cricket.
Next week, is your badminton in order or we got to rearrange again?
I am in Brighton... this Sunday. Yeah, we're going to have to rearrange. Sorry.
Sophie's got a face on.
I did tell you this was coming up. I got a busy period. I'm like Santa in December. But it's April. But we'll have to rearrange. But let's not want us to hear about that. Thank you very much, Ryan. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks to
everyone that's joined us here at the old house.
Up the boys.
At home. Cheers to the guys down here as well. And thank you again to our dub of the week, Aaron, for our beer glasses. Absolutely smashing job, mate. Thank you very much. And thank you, Pompey fans, for listening to Three Lads in the Pub. Up the Blues. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.